Hello, everybody. It's great to be here one more time today. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GSD Gets You Done Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with several unicorns under the belt. I was on the original management team at Click Software, which has sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion, and also Eva.ai, an AI HR tech company I co-founded with Dr. David Yang. We believe at GSD that intellectual capacity is evenly spread around the world, but opportunities are not. And for many of you that are here, repeat, you understand that GSD gets shit done. It is also my family office, the Fowler family office. We have 180 companies in our portfolio today representing 73 countries around the world. So with that, I'd like to bring my incredible guest on, and I'd like to welcome to GSD Presents, Silicon Valley AI and Tech, Top Global Startups, where we talk with founders and innovators who are reshaping the future of technology and entrepreneurship around the world. Today's episode is called Competing with the Giants, How Central Asian Startups Can Challenge AWS. When most people think about cloud infrastructure, they immediately think of the three big names, Azure, AWS, and Google Cloud. But in regions with strict data sovereignty rules, unreliable connectivity, are very specific performance needs, global hyperscalers just don't cut it. That's where local cloud champions can step in and sometimes even outperform the giants. So today, my guest is Almajan Musayev, founder and CEO of HyperApp and Enterprise Cloud. He's been in IT for more than a decade, launching movie streaming sites, mobile apps, and browser games in Uzbekistan for local users, as well as projects for the Canadian and U.S. markets. After battling the reality of unreliable infrastructure in Uzbekistan, including a 2 a.m. incident where a bare metal provider literally lost connectivity because they forgot to pay their ISP. Imagine that. He decided to build the kind of cloud he wished he had. So today, HyperApp Enterprise Cloud empowers everything from ERPs for factories and hospitality systems to game studios and fintech platforms, while guaranteeing a 99.99% uptime SLA, owning its own infrastructure, partnership with Lenovo, and expanding beyond Uzbekistan into Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and eventually Europe. He's also founded the first game dev community in Uzbekistan, built the Gamefall Studio, and worked with organizations like UNICEF and UNESCO and the World Bank. He's a project manager by training, a founder by conviction, and one of the emerging forces and faces of the Central Asian tech ecosystem. So with that, I'd like to welcome on board. Hey, how are you doing today?
Hi, Gary. Thank you for inviting for this podcast. I'm happy to be here.
No, it's great to have you. So take us back to that 2 a.m. incident where no one could connect to the servers because a provider hadn't paid the ISP. What were you going through at that point? What were you going through in your mind? And how did that moment turn into the decision to create HyperApp?
The reason was I was a project manager in the project. And the next day we needed to launch that information system that will be used by more than 100,000 users. And it had to be launched at 9 a.m. and everybody was announced and informed. So we were updating our information system with a team of 10 plus people from other companies also. We were doing some integrations. We found out the bug that was very critical, and we needed to fix it fast. As soon as we fixed it, we needed to update on the infrastructure. And that time we were using bare metal servers. We were renting bare metal. And at 2 a.m., everybody is working. And one of the developers said, "I got lost connection," and others also. I mean, nobody could enter to the virtual machines. Nobody could connect to the bare metal server. And we were thinking, what's happened? We didn't know that. We thought that problem was in our office, maybe with the internet. And everybody was panicking because time is ticking, 7 hours I mean, till the launch, official launch, and we were knocking the door of the provider that were provide us with a bare metal, and nobody answered. After half an hour, some person answered and said, just call us at 9 a.m. when our technical guys will come. And we said, guys, we need to fix it. And we reached the CEO of that company, and he even, I mean, surprised that it never happened, what happened. And he were, I mean, waking up his technical team at 2 or maybe 3 a.m. it's almost. And it turns out their internet got, lost connection. And it turns out the accountant of that company didn't pay for the bills and then for the internet service provider. And billing of the internet service provider started working from 12 a.m. And as there are lots of other companies, and at 2 a.m. it just shut down the internet. And it took us about hour or more in order to reach that internet service provider, in order to restore the connection, and in order to restore the connection of our, I mean, servers. And yeah, everybody was tired, everybody was disappointed, but we made it. We made a successful launch. And after the launch, we were fixing in production mode everything that we catched, because we didn't have time to quality assurance. So after that, me and my friend just sat down and we said, we need to solve that problem. We need a reliable cloud service provider. And then from that day, it all started. 4th of April, 2022.
So, you know, you look at it, let's talk about it. For someone sitting in Silicon Valley or London, cloud sounds like a solved problem, just like spin up AWS and go. What are the unique infrastructure challenges that startups and enterprises in Uzbekistan and Central Asia face to be able to hyperscale their company to success? And why don't more of them become unicorns?
So let's start with the thing that when we started, we made the research of with the clients of hyperscalers. There are lots of companies in Uzbekistan using the hyperscalers and other cloud service providers, I mean, from Europe, US, and other countries, right? In 2022, there were one or two cloud service providers in Uzbekistan. The problem was hyperscalers are too complex. If you are launching some kind of startup, you need to launch it fast. I mean, you don't have to hire, I mean, specialists that is certified AWS, right? Because you need to focus on your product first, not on your infrastructure. But infrastructure is the heart of the startups. So the problem, first problem was for the startups, it's too complex. For the enterprises, it's kind of too expensive. And it's hard to migrate due to multi-cloud solutions, right? When even hyperscalers get down. So especially in Uzbekistan, there was some legal issues also, because personal data has to be stored inside the country, and hyperscalers and other foreign cloud providers doesn't have their own infrastructure inside Uzbekistan. And that was a problem, because even me launching the projects, I mean, even pet projects, I needed to choose. If I'm using personal data, I need to store it inside the country. But inside the country, there were no cloud service providers. And if I don't use the personal data but launch something else, as a project manager, I needed to hire, I mean, expensive specialists that can run on AWS. So that was a problem, especially.
So where a regional player can win, let's be very direct. Where can a Central Asian cloud provider realistically beat AWS? And where is it smarter to integrate or coexist rather than compete with them head on?
So in the beginning, we don't want to compete with them, but it just started with competition because most of our target users were using the hyperscalers. And there are lots of problems. First, as I told you, they are not storing the data inside the country. Second, there is a big latency because the closest zone of AWS, it's like Singapore, some say it's Europe. Latency is big. It means customers of these enterprises has bad user experience. It costs money, right, for the business. And also, they are very expensive. They will give you free tier for 1 year, and after year, month by month, it will be increasing. And it's very complex for them also because AWS and as any hyperscalers does multiple functions that you just turn it on and it will just start charging you. And whenever you are enterprise or startup, support of the hyperscalers or any other cloud service providers are very bad. It's not my words, it's from their users, right? And what we are delivering is in Central Asia, we are providing the most reliable infrastructure and 24/7 customer support. It's not just a call center, it's just technical guys that are sitting, answering, and solving the real problems of the companies. That's why we just started. We didn't have choice to compete or not. We just started with this business model.
And what's your monthly recurring revenue now?
We launched it this year after May in the production. Right now, I cannot tell you for sure the real data, but we have 30 plus customers already. Months ago, it was 15 plus, 16, 17. Right now, we have 30 plus. It's startups, some enterprises, some fintech, and right now we are working with one of the biggest companies in Uzbekistan. Next year, they're going to migrate to our infrastructure. We're doing the migration strategy because for the enterprises, you know, it's very hard to migrate, just switch their cloud or switch from the private service to the cloud. So that's why we are planning with both teams from their side, from our side.
You know, you're powering ERPs for factories, hospital systems, accounting platforms, investing apps, et cetera, and also game studios. So, you know, was this vertical focus intentional as a go-to-market against giant strategy, or did it emerge organically?
So, it just happened that we focused on B2B sector only, and in Uzbekistan, there are not enough enterprises like in United States or in Europe, right? And we like startups because they have potential to become enterprises if we provide them with right support. So we didn't choose the vector field of the companies. We just chose to work with B2B. And they come to us with their problem, we solve them, and that's why we have different kind of companies. I mean, hospitalities, game development studio, and financial side. So for the game development studio, we didn't just, provide the infrastructure, we provide the solution in order to manage all of their teams. Like, it's like a GitHub on the cloud, but for game development studios, because GitHub doesn't work with big assets. So we managed to optimize the workflow and they synchronize because their team from different regions, they synchronize all the files, updates, and everything works very well.
You know, in your writing, you've mentioned shutting down a more complex autonomous cloud panel and going back to a simpler IaaS model because users found it too complex. How much of your differentiation is simply we're easier to understand and to buy from than AWS?
I can tell you with the fact, whenever we onboard people, we spend just a couple of minutes, maximum 5 minutes, in order to explain the control panel. After that, we don't have any calls, requests on the support. They launch their microservices, they launch their, everything, every project, and some companies launch multiple projects, and they didn't even ask for explanation of something. It's very simple because we built this platform 3 times. First time, it was very complex with all the features of the AWS, like buttons. And second time, it was just, less complex. But even though user said it's kind of, not user-friendly. Third time, we got all the feedbacks of the users, what they told, and we started from the bottom. We just developed it from the zero. We just removed all the stuff that we did and started development from the zero. And right now it's working very well. It's very fast and it's very user-friendly. In order to launch any even complex infrastructure, you can launch easily. Sorry, Gary, I don't hear you.
I said you're starting in Uzbekistan, expanding to Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, eventually Europe. How does being from Central Asia shape your strategy? And, you know, one of the things I see, because I deal with companies all over the world, is that it's tough unless you're in Silicon Valley to be able to go global. It's really tough because there's networking contacts, operational expertise, and access to capital. A lot of great ideas, but real tough for all kinds of different reasons, modesty, those kind of things. So, you know, being from Central Asia, how does that shape your strategy, both in terms of constraints and superpowers?
So, first of all, it's not a secret, and we tell everybody that we have strategic partnership with Lenovo. Lenovo provides us with HPCs, high-performance hardwares. We own that hardware ourselves. And we started with Uzbekistan, and also the stack of technology and the team that have expertise on launching this kind of big projects. For us, it's easier to expand as a cloud service provider. And why we chose the Kyrgyzstan is neighborhood country. And when we made it just a weekend trip with our team to Kyrgyzstan, we just started researching, and it turns out they have a big demand, and there is no cloud service providers in Kyrgyzstan. In Uzbekistan, it's almost 10 plus, right? Cloud service providers, local cloud service providers. In Kyrgyzstan, there are none. And why we started thinking about global expansion, that we didn't have any plans, till 3-5 years, but some big company in Europe reached us and told that they had a problem with Microsoft Azure. And as we didn't have any infrastructure in Europe, we provided our cloud from Uzbekistan. And they did about 6 months of testing, experimenting from cybersecurity side, from performance side. And they talked with our team, and it just happened that they liked our cloud, and they said, we need to migrate, and you need to launch in Europe, and you need to have legal entity in Europe. So in these terms, we cannot launch with just one client, right, in Europe. So we more and more. We even attended Web Summit in Lisbon recently, and we made a good decision, good connections with people, startups, and companies. And it turns out the problem with hyperscalers, there is a problem with hyperscalers even in Europe, even in the United States also. So we saw the demand for our cloud. We found the product market fit, and we are solving the real problems. And when even we start telling what we're providing, they're just getting catched, and they said, let's pilot, let's, I mean, try it, show us your, I mean, platform, let's run something, let's see the performance. And we get the attention and clients with good customer service, I think.
So now you've written very honestly about rejections, mistakes, and failures on HyperApp journey. What was the hardest moment when you thought maybe this is too big and I shouldn't be doing it? And what kept you from quitting?
So it started from the beginning. When we decided that we need to launch our cloud provider with our founders, we were looking for the money because it's hardware costs, it's development costs, right? You need to hire people in order to launch a platform. And also, when we decided that we want to own our hardware, it's additional millions of dollars, right? When we get to one of the our potential customers and potential investor, angel investor, he rejected us. He said, guys, you don't have, I mean, technical background in terms of cloud. You cannot make it. And I cannot, I mean, trust you that you can make this happen. And we said to our sales tech, challenge is accepted. We need to build it. We need to build it in Uzbekistan. We need to build it with no investment and no money. And that moment, we started looking for the partnerships. We gathered the team of professionals that's not powered by just the money, but with a big idea, with decision. And we made a pitch for 10 years of business plan for Lenovo. And Lenovo supported us. And we launched our project in Uzbekistan. And so right now,
are you one of your VCs now? Are they investor?
Right now, there is no VCs, but we are looking for them right now, looking for the investment for the global expansion. Yep.
You know, you created the first game dev community in Uzbekistan and founded Gamefall. How much has your background in games influenced how you think about infrastructure, user experience, and reliability?
So, it's a good question. Thank you for that. In 2019, I founded the Gamefall Game Development Studio. And it's like when you want to develop the game, I mean, I have deep expertise in game because I made lots of, I mean, studies in order to develop the game. In order to make people play more of your game, you need to let people launch your game in maximum 3 clicks play, right? So in these terms, we made a decision on cloud also to make user friendly. And right now, even we are developing the one-click deployment of infrastructure. Like you are a startup, you know, stack of technologies. I mean, you are developing on Java or something like that. You choose and click and it develops itself. Without the DevOps, without the system administrator or anyone.
You know, you go down through it and, you know, let's look at that. What is the future of cloud in Central Asia, you know, Asian advice? You know, let's look forward 10 years. What is the cloud landscape in Central Asia look like if things go the way you hope? And secondly, are you talking about a few strong regional players or true global challenges emerging from Tashkent and Almaty?
So let's start with future, right? For 10 years, I see that right now there is a big demand for data centers. Even though the cloud providers are increasing, new startups are increasing, but everybody needs data centers. In Central Asia, we have lack of data centers. So the more investment will be in the data centers. The next thing is AI infrastructure. Even our company is Right now, we are making strategy to provide the inference as a service or GPU clusters as a service. We are working on that. We are aiming to that field also because AI startups is raising, and they don't they cannot run just on high performance cloud. They will need GPU servers also. So the future with AI, I think, and with the data centers that is powering the AI clouds. And about the big players in Central Asia, if we see the local kind of competitors, right, there are more cloud providers in Kazakhstan rather than in Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. There are big companies like Freedom. By the way, right now,
Turkmenistan. How is Turkmenistan? Is there anything happening there?
So I don't have any ideas about the Turkmenistan and Tajikistan because we need to go there in order to see how things work and is there any market, because I never been there, so I cannot tell you for sure how it's going there.
That's interesting. So, you know, let's go down through and talk about it. Mm-hmm. How did you, so you look at these games that you developed, how did you go from doing the games? Like, did you exit your other company? Do you still have it? And how did you come to the new company? And what was that journey like?
So I'm in IT from 2012. I was doing pet projects, websites, and doing the programming. From that time, I had a problem with even hosting providers and virtual server providers from that time. But I never thought about launching the cloud business. But what I was fond of, playing the games, and I was curious how the games were developing. And when I was studying in university, I gave it my friends and said, let's do the game. And that time we started the game for game development studio. But in Uzbekistan, nobody knew how games are developed. We were trying to find the right people, and we had less expertise in game development, and we had a lack of resources. Even there were no venture companies, right? Angels also were not interested in game development because they didn't have even expertise. So that's why after a couple of years, I needed to shut down this, because there were no market in Uzbekistan. There were no resources enough and no talent enough. And after that, after a couple of big projects that I was working with UNICEF and the government sector, corporate sector, I thought it's time to launch a cloud business because it's the future and it will power our next startups that we even aim to launch, right?
So, you know, who do you want to hear from after this episode? Game studios, fintechs, investors, enterprise CIOs.
Who I want to hear from?
Yeah, if you could dream, like say, I'd love to talk to that person. They could help, you know, maybe you want to put them on board or hire them as, you know, just as a guest. How do you go down through and do that? How do you find those things?
So right now, I don't think that I'm looking for the investor actively. I was looking for some advisor, not just investor, but advisor that can help me expand our product, I mean, our company globally. Because expansion from the technology side, we can handle. That's not a problem. But as a CEO, I'm the youngest person in my company, by the way, after one person. And I'm the youngest CEO, I think, in this kind of company startups. And I will need someone wiser that can lead me sometimes in our global strategy.
You know, that's part of the problem with a lot of companies. I see them all over the world. And the problem is, no matter where they're from, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, MIT, Dartmouth, Moscow State University, INSAD, doesn't matter. The problem is, you know, the one thing you learn as you go down through this process, you know that you don't know. So that's one of the things. You go down through it and you know you don't know. But you also know there's a lot of people out there that are contacts and relationships that care about you, want to help. And the secret of Silicon Valley is, as you know, coming over here, right, there's a lot going on. Half the money in the world still located here comes here for deal flow. And it's vibrant. So the key is, how do you get into that? And a lot of people come over. It's like if I flew to Tashkent and just happened to drop in, it would take me a couple of years to really get to know people, like really know, right? Mm-hmm. Because you could be, you're like a tourist. It's the same thing. And, you know, I remember last night, the one woman that was with Alchemist said that 19 or 20 of the top startups right now, one of their co-founders is born, they're not from the U.S., they've immigrated. So there's a lot of foreign-born founders here. But the key is, how do you turn that into opportunity? And the other thing is, they forget how important marketing is. Marketing, strategic marketing at the highest level is critically important. Why? Because 90% of building the unicorn is not the product. It is the story. It is the way that you can tell the story. It's got to be enchanting and exciting and touch your soul. And if you can't do that, forget about it. Think about, you know, a lot of my friends out there, you know, look at Jensen from NVIDIA. I mean, he can tell stories. Steve Jobs, practice. He used to practice to do it. And he got really good. But that's really important, because being able to articulate your story clearly is important, so that people understand what the investment opportunity truly is and how to grow it. So it's great. Listen, we're coming up to the top of the show. Closing thoughts, and how do people get a hold of you?
So everybody can contact me on LinkedIn. I'm very available. And I would just advise for the younger generation, new startup founders, that even first time startup founders, to never give up. Whatever it takes, if you got your idea, if you want to realize it, you need to get till the end, because it might be not perfect. You might not have clients in the beginning, but when you keep going, and everything will be clear, and you need to listen to your customers, I mean, even potential customers, and they will tell you what they need.
Well, that's customer development, right? And you go out and you got to validate your idea for my friends, yes, Steve Blank and Bob Dorf. So that's really critically important. Most startups never do it. Whenever I'm forming a company and I'm real serious about it, I get down to university in Palo Alto and I sit down with people. I'll get 50 interviews done. I'll sit down and talk to them about my product or service. And I'll mock up slides. I won't spend the money even to build it. I want to see, one, is if it's interesting for them. And if it is, then I got one more thing, that the probability of success goes up, right? Because these are people that are looking at startups all the time. Anyhow, what's the best way to get a hold of you? LinkedIn? Do you have your
LinkedIn? Telegram. I have Telegram. I mean, Akbaljan Musayev. And I think that's it. Just two.
No, that's fantastic. And if you want to stay on after the show, I'm happy to talk to you a little bit. And to all my audience, thanks for joining one more time. GST Presents Top Global Startups. My name is Gary Fowler, and I'm the founder and head of my family office. And it's great to have all of you here today. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. And I'll be back again soon with another exciting edition. Thanks, Abma John. And thanks,
everyone. Thank you very much, everyone.